Sure. So that's where they are, far, 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 far away from home. All right? Just want you to see that. And so we're going to look at this first chapter. It's Daniel living a godly life in a secular land or world, and the challenges that presents itself. And so let's read the Daniel chapter 1, and we're going to read most of the first chapter, then we'll talk about it. So we're in verse 3. So the king ordered Aspenaz, the chief of his officials, that'd be like a chief of staff for the president, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and of the nobles. Youths in whom there was no defect, who were good looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had ability for serving in the king's court. And he ordered them to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily ration from the king's choice food and from the wine which he drank, and appointed that they should be educated 3 years, at the end of which they were to enter the king's personal service. Now among them were the sons of Judah, were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And the commander of the officials assigned new names to them, and to Daniel he assigned the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. Now, we know these three individuals because we like saying their names, right? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It just kind of rolls off the tongue. But that is not their original names. These are Chaldean or names from Babylon. Their original Hebrew names are given there, and that'd be a good trivia question. So what were the real names of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Now, just as a preview, what happens to these three young men later? They're thrown into a furnace of fire. That's right. So just as a preview. So I just want you to consider what's going on here, that these individuals, they're not just slaves. They come from two groups, royalty, isn't that right? And from the nobles. And how old are they? Well, say youths. Now, that's hard to determine their age, but somewhere from their teens to probably 20. You know, that's it. That's it. Okay, so they're young people, and they're being carried into captivity. So it's interesting. When a king conquered, did he kill everyone? Well, obviously not. He took sometimes the best of the people, and he introduced them into his society and used them. And that was part of the Babylonians, sort of like the Romans allowed people to worship even after they conquered them. They allowed them to maintain their own worship. That he would let people come in and use their knowledge and their skills and incorporate them into their own society. And that made the Babylonian Empire, you know, largely great. But what kind of youths are they that he's handpicking? Notice what it says. No defect. That means what? Well, yeah, but what does that mean, without blemish?
Well, in other words, they were very
healthy.
Yeah.
All right, did they have a outturned leg and drag it?
No.
No, I mean, these were good specimens athletically or physically. All right, how about appearance?
Yeah. Good looking.
Now, that's in beauty's in the whole eye of the beholder, but they were good-looking fellas, but they were intelligent. And I think this is in the disciplines, because every branch of wisdom, so that would be mathematics, you know, literature, history, all those things, you know, those disciplines, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, that would be wisdom. They had leadership skills. They could see the end from the beginning. And they had ability for serving in the king's court. So he ordered them to be taught in the colleges of their land. So what we really see here is a fulfillment of the promise in Isaiah 39, when God said, when you're taken in captivity, this is what's going to happen. Some of your sons will issue from you, whom you will beget, will be taken away, and they will become officials in the palace of the king of Babylon. That's interesting that slaves are going to become officials in this foreign land, according to God's command or his prophecy. But really what we're seeing here is I call it a brain drain. Because where were they taken from? Israel. The best of the best taken to Babylon. What's left in Israel? Just the lame, the old, the diseased, the ugly. No, the slow. All right. No, it's the best are taken into captivity. You see that. Now, imagine if you're one of those young boys and you're risen and you were raised in a noble family or a royal family, and all of a sudden you find yourself shackled, led in captivity in a foreign land where you don't know the language, you don't know any customs, and you go, what happened to my life? Has it turned south real quick? Yeah. Now, there's two choices or two paths you could take at this moment. You could sulk, you could whine, and you complain, and you could ask the proverbial question that everyone has. It's almost obligatory when something goes wrong in the United States. Someone always says, why did God do this to me? You know what everyone does? But when things go well, does anyone ever say, why did God do this to me? They only ask that question when things go bad. Now, these young boys are faced with a catastrophe. It's really traumatic. And we're going to see how Daniel chooses to push forward rather than look back. And to be an overcomer rather than really have a slave mentality. And it's really quite marvelous. It gives us an example of how we can live a godly life in an ungodly world ourselves. And that's the lessons we want to learn. Yes. Yes.
I mean, looking at people today of that kind of description, upper teens, lower 20s, good looking, athletic, you're going to have some people who were godly people, and yes, this is a catastrophe. You're going to have other people that are going, really? This is our torture. All right.
Yeah.
Sign me up. And we got the best wine will be in top. We got
people. Right. And that's Trudy. If you didn't hear everything he said, some people are going to take advantage of the situation and rise to the top. What's going to set Daniel apart, he's not going to play their game totally. He's not going to rise to the top according to their means. He's going to say, whoa, there's some lines that I'm going to draw that I will not cross. And we're going to illustrate. But you're exactly right. Yes, Matt. Yes.
And they would be taught how to act in front of nobles and kings, and so
they're already literate. They already have that decorum. That's right.
If only, really think about it, those were the best choices.
They're the cream of the crop, and that's why I call it a brain drain. So you're seeing what kind of people we have here. So here's what he said in X. He says, let's give them a daily ration, so we'll feed them the best food so they can be healthy, right? Then we're going to educate them in our schools. We'll get them the best education possible. That's like we're giving scholarships to the brightest of our country to go to the best schools, supposedly. Then we're going to put in the government service. And then, thirdly, we're going to give them new names. I want you to see four things that are going on here that they have to deal with. And there could be potential problems. There's going to be a change in their diet. There's going to be change in their education. There's going to be change in who they serve, and there's going to be change even in their name. That's right. This is something. It's not just some casual going camping. This is totally being assimilated into another culture. And are they going to go with it or change? Now, their names, we already saw that, are changed right here, and we'll mention that in a second. But they've come this far. And here's what's happening, but I just want you to see in three areas. Socially, are they being reprogrammed? How about mentally? Just their education. They're going to learn the language and the literature and all the schooling of this new nation. Then how about physically? Yeah, they're being asked to eat the king's food and all those things that they deem important for you to be healthy. This is a total re-socialization project, okay? I'm reminded of this. Anyone remember what that is? The Borg. If you ever watch Star Wars, The Next Generation, the Borg comes in. They're famous for what? They're a bunch of mechanical computer things, and they would hijack people and then make them half computers and half humans, and you're all part of the collective, and you all think as one mind. Of course, Captain Picard got taken in. And what was the famous line from the Borg? That's right, exactly. You cannot resist. You don't remember this? You didn't have TV growing up, I understand. What's that? That's why you're still healthy, I know. It was just one of those sci-fi. That's what this reminds me of. You're being assimilated, and is resistance futile when you're a slave? Well, we're going to see that Daniel says there's a line that I'm going to cross. But he picks his battles, and that's what I want you to see. Yes?
I was just going to say, the alternative was to be treated like a slave, and, you know,
you'd be in the quarry picking rocks, right? But sometimes if it means you have to compromise your morals or your spiritual values, what are you going to pick? To live in royalty or be in the mines? Well, how about Moses? He considered the reproaches of Christ better than living in Pharaoh's court. And he gave him up for what he said, the passing pleasures of sin. Now, here their names change. This is interesting identity. When you change the name, it shows ownership as well. Because when you give birth to someone, you name them, and you show by that name they belong to us. Not just the first name, but also the surname, right? They're a Hafer, and they belong to us. And so Daniel's name in the Hebrew is God is my judge. Every one of their new names speaks and refers to one of the idols of Babylon. So this is the treasure of Bel. Hananiah is the Lord is gracious. He's the commander of Aku, that's a moon god. Mishael is really who's like God. His name is now who is what Aku is. In other words, you are just who Aku is. That's the moon god. Azariah, the Lord helps. Well, he's called Abednego, which means servant of Nego, another idol. Would that be hard to swallow when you worship one true living God and now your name, you're called by an idol, a servant of an idol? How far are you going to go with this before you say, enough is enough? So that's what I want you to see here is when we look at it, because Paul, when we go through this backwards, taking Babylonian names, did they have any choice in that matter? I mean, if you're called Abednego, and someone says Abednego,
if the king called your name and you didn't answer,
you're dead. Does that make you Abednego just because they call you that?
No.
So they can call you whatever you want, but you have no choice in the matter, correct?
Correct.
All right, so Daniel's not going to make an issue about this. He's not going to fight over this. Now, it's interesting because some people in the name of Christ are going to fight everything that comes their way. We will not stand for this, but there's no fight here. Then how about the king's service? They're going to be asked to serve this really evil man called Nebuchadnezzar. We won't take time until some talk about his atrocities, but he was not a good king. He was very evil and cruel in many ways. And now you find yourself serving him. Does he resist and say, no, I refuse?
No.
No. Well, can you work for the government of the United States? Well, can you work for them when they're doing bad things? Well, apparently Daniel thought what? You could do that. And then how about schooling? Man, I wouldn't send my kid to Harvard because they're going to teach them all sorts of rot. Well, did they say, no, we're not going to your classes? Did they draw a line there? There's no indication that they did. But when it came to the king's food, they had some laws given to them as the Jews about what was clean and unclean. And here's where Daniel says, I'm going to draw the line. When you're asking me to do something personally that violates my faith with God, I can't do it. But he doesn't throw up a stink. He bargains. And I want you to see how he does that. There's a lot of wisdom here. Okay, someone had their hand up. No one? All right. Okay, we're back to our text. But you see where I am? Because there's a lot of things you have to pick and choose where you're going to fight in this life. What things are important. Because this world, you know, isn't all good, is it? There's a lot of things that are really, really, really bad. But we have to pick our fights, because some we can live with and some we can't. We have to draw a line. All right, so verse 8. But Daniel made up his mind. What does your Bible say?
Purpose.
Purposed in his heart. This is comes from within, from who you are. It's not a show. It's not something you put on. It's intrinsic to your very being. He made up his mind. I can't do this. I just can't. So he made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. Now the food, there could be unclean things like certain shellfishes or pig meat, certain things they couldn't eat. Why the wine? Well, they had wine back then. Could be that. It wasn't, let me just say, it's not the alcohol. That wasn't the issue.
No, it was what it was made out of.
Nah, probably not even that. If they were sacrificed idols. That was it. Because that was the condition. Even Paul said, I'll never eat meat or drink wine again because my brothers stumble. Because often wine was offered in the sacrifices. And so that's probably the best guess of why he couldn't do it. All right? Now, you could study that out for yourself. So, what does he do? He seeks permission from the commander of the official that he might not defile himself. Now, what does that imply? Does he go in there and just say, I'm not going to do this? He seeks what? Permission. Let's see if we come to some resolution about this. Now, what if they couldn't have? What would he have done next? I don't know because it doesn't say. But I just want you to note the approach that he takes before he just starts fighting. He tries to come to a resolution. Just like Paul says, be at peace with all men as much as it depends upon you. All right? Yes.
Well, Daniel understood that God's still in control.
Right.
He wavered from that at any point or any time. Same as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They all understood who they were and that God had them there for a purpose.
That's right.
And so God's, it's just like with Joseph. God will give him favor. And that's
right.
What he does here.
Well, look at verse 9. You're exactly right. Now, God granted Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the commander of the officials. In other words, the commander probably liked Daniel. Said, I can see you're different. Liked him, and that favor came through God somehow. Maybe because the faith that Daniel had, he could see it in it. But is there a lesson here? If you're true to your God and true to who your convictions are, this is being authentic. People talk about being authentic today. Being authentic is you're being genuine to what you know is true and you're not going to budge, but you're not going to be obnoxious about it. Because is Daniel being obnoxious?
No.
He's seeking permission. Will God work with you to some kind of resolution? It sure seems like that's what's happening. Now, would it always be the case? No, Paul got stoned. You know, but he didn't die. You know, Paul got shipwrecked, but he didn't die. But you know, God will work with those that are working for and with him. I just want you to see that. God granted him favor. So there's what we see, that he's going to make an issue about this one. He made up his mind, sought permission, and now God granted him favor. Now, here's what the commander says. In my words, Daniel, we got a problem. If I don't present you before the king, and you're looking healthy, as well as smart and all those other things, learn your lessons, speak in Chaldean, I'm going to lose my head. Now, I like you, Daniel, but is that what you're asking me to do? This is a tough spot you're putting me in. You say, well, how'd you get that? Well, I'm afraid of my lord the king, that's Nebuchadnezzar, who has appointed your food and your drink. For why should he see your faces looking more haggard than the youths or your own age? In other words, you're not going to eat this? When I present you before him, they'll say, what happened to those four? And he says, you would make me forfeit my head. Now, is that a real problem? So Daniel says, okay, I'll eat your food. Right? Is that what he do? So I'm not going to eat it no matter what. No, that would be putting this guy in danger as well. So what does he do? Let's read. Well, let's read then. That's right. So verse 11, Daniel said to the overseer, whom the commander of the officials had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Here's the challenge. Please test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given some vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be observed in your presence and the appearance of our use for eating the king's choice food, and deal with your servants according to what you see. Now, they're supposed to go to this schooling for 3 months, and Daniel says, you just give me 10 days. Vegetables and water. And then after 10 days, line us up and see if we look good. Does that seem fair? And to a reasonable person, it is fair. So here we have his a 10-day challenge. But notice this. Is he aware and realizes what the problem is? And is he resolved to do something about it? Rather than just say, well. And then is he wise in his approach, his assessing of how to best solve this problem? And then the last thing, he's proactive. He approaches the commander. Is there some risk at that?
Yes.
Sure, when you're a slave, you know, to ask a favor like that. But he says, I'm going to ask it anyway. And God gives him favor. So he's aware. He's resolved to do something about it. He talks about the solution rather than just going in there half-cocked. And then he's proactive. He has a plan. Isn't that what Daniel's doing this? Now, we live in an ungodly world, too. And you're going to encounter people you work with you don't like. And sometimes they're just not very good employees. They might be cheating on the job or whatever. And we're going to have situations at school. We're around people that don't carry their weight on a school project. We're going to be around, I mean, just everywhere you look, there's going to be challenges. Now, we can be like Daniel and take a positive approach to it. Or we can take like some like whine and complain, or we can just start protesting like people do on the street. Well, notice what happens. So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, their appearance seemed better and they were fatter than all the youths who had been eating the king's choice food. So the overseer continued to withhold their choice food and the wine they were to drink and kept giving the vegetables. Now, the answer is already, I don't know. Was their food so much better that it made them fatter and look better than the food that the king was giving them? Or did God cause this to happen?
I think God did.
Well, you said think, and I appreciate that. Well, that's true. That's why I asked the question. But can you eat a vegetarian diet and put on weight?
Yes.
Well, yeah. Can you live a vegetarian diet if it's well-rounded with proteins and all the minerals and vitamins you need? Yes. But is God showing them favor? I would lean more to that, but the answer I already said is what? He doesn't tell us, does he? Unless it's implied in him showing him favor. Yes. But this is a king's food. You think it's going to have? It's the best.
They didn't have pasteurization and all that other stuff back.
Yeah.
There was problems with the meat.
I know, but we could spend another 20 minutes just speculating. Right. But that's a good speculation. The problem is, we don't know, and I'll just suggest this. You do what God asks. He'll take care of you. That's the bottom line. You're true to your Lord. No matter what it takes and where you are, they're thousands of miles away from their homeland. They're given new names, a new identity. They're being totally reprogrammed, and now they're asked to defile themselves by breaking God's commandment. And you have a choice to make. And I'm going to be true to God and true to myself, or am I going to compromise? And he chose to be true. And God will take care of you. It's a great lesson, isn't it? All right? Yes.
It's also gives you an idea of his
Oh, he has ability to lead, doesn't he? Yes. Yes, very much so. So, it says, as for the four youths, this one makes me think this is why the diet worked. God gave them knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom. And Daniel even understood all kinds of visions and dreams. Beyond just, you know, intelligence, God gives them the ability to interpret dreams. Now, we're going to see that in chapter 2. Take a peek in chapter 2 and verse 1, where Nebuchadnezzar has this dream, and his spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. So who does he call in verse 2? Magicians, the conjurers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell the king his dreams. It just gives you a picture of all the people that he has serving him. And Joseph might be regarded as one of these, but we've got people from all trades and walk of life. Sorcerers, conjurers, astrologers, whatever it is. People that are called to interpret his dream. Of course, they're all going to fail. But David is in this class with all of them, and God causes him to excel because he gives him this wisdom. And what God does for you is going to make you shine. There's just no doubt about it. All right? So there's where we are in verse 16. We finished there. So look at verse 17 back in chapter 1. Verse 18, excuse me. That the end of the days, when the king had specified for presenting them, he, commander of the officials, presented them before Nebuchadnezzar. So this is the big showing. Would there be a little tension or apprehension by the king and the commanders? In other words, how did your training go? Can you speak Chaldean? How is your physical appearance? You know, there's a lot riding on the line because, you know, you've been given this task, and if you don't deliver, well, he's already been fearful of the king of losing his head, right? And so here's what happens. The king talked with them. So it's a personal interview, isn't it? And out of all of them, not one was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's personal service. They just didn't work in the royal court. They're personal servants or aides to the king. Now, what's astounding about that? What nationality are they? They're Jews. They came as slaves, and now they are in his personal service. What are some other examples where we see that happening? I'm sorry? Joseph goes to a slave, to a prisoner in Egypt, and rises to second in charge. Who did that? God said God had favor upon him. Who else? Yes.
It goes further. When Joseph's family comes in, he said, God has made me like a father to Pharaoh.
That's right. He was that's right. Now, God had a plan in that, I understand, because he sent him down there to save his family, to save the lineage of Abraham so Jesus could be born. But we see the same scenario, right? How about Esther? She finds herself as just a little peasant girl, and what next thing, what is she?
Queen.
The queen. All right? And that's pretty amazing, okay?
Moses.
I'm sorry?
Moses.
Yeah, well, Moses. Yeah, Moses. Yeah. You know, he's put in a little basket just to save his life because there's a death sentence on all babies. And now he's raised in Pharaoh's court in royalty. All right? So it's interesting. We have that text that Paul says, if God is for us, who can be against us? We say, well, that's nice. But do we believe it? We see it over and over and over. But does our faith in God require some initiative on our part? Just be true to him, act on what you know you can do, do it wisely, and let God take care of the rest. All right? So there's verse 19, and now let's look, or 18. So, verse 20, we didn't read that. As for every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king consulted them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and the conjurers that were in his realm. So Daniel continued until the first year of Cyrus the king. 10 times better. Now, I don't know. Was that something inherent before he started? Or was it all given to him by God? I would think probably more the latter, but was he skilled to start with?
Yes.
Yeah, they had to be intelligent or else they wouldn't be in this program. So this Daniel is a remarkable person. And he stood his ground, and rather suffering for it, he was blessed for it. Now, how many times we think that? Well, if I stand up for what's right, I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to lose my job. Or I'll lose favor with friends or people. Don't we think that a lot of times?
And sometimes we do.
Well, that's true. That's right. But that's the peer pressure Satan puts on us to get us to shut up and not do anything. Because he's always lying to us that it's always going to turn out bad. No, I would suggest more often than not, it's going to turn out, you know, well. Just do what is right, and God's going to take care of us no matter what happens. We just have to have that confidence and faith in him. Any thoughts about that? All right, so let's kind of finish this up. There's an example of a godly Jew in David, isn't it? And also, David. We see that his being holy in an unholy land is a choice. Now, I know it's hard, but when it comes down to it, for you being pure and living a good a Christian life and following Christ like he wants you, it really is just a choice. And yes, sometimes life doesn't turn out the way we want it. You know, whether relationships, finances, health, and it's easy to get sour on life and go, why did things turn out like they did for me? Especially when we see other people turning out well. Well, I would want you to think of Daniel. What did he do to deserve this? Not a bit of it. Just like Joseph. What was Joseph's only fault that put him in Egypt in captivity? Huh? That's his only fault. Daddy loved him. Wow. But that's that on Daddy. He loved him more than the rest. That caused some sibling rivaling. But that's the only thing he did wrong was loved by his father. And that's not on him at all, is it? But did God work that out for good?
Yes.
So we have this choice whether to say, poor is me and life is miserable, or we can just keep our chin up and look to God and realize, you know, I don't even care if I have to die down here. I'm going to be true to my Lord because I know he won't deny me if I don't deny him. I'm going to hang in there. And more often than not, it'll work out. Because God's presence is even in captivity, isn't it? Now, he promised this would happen. And they're down in this foreign land, 1,000 miles away. But is God still there with them? So what lesson do we learn there? I don't know where life's going to lead you. In what kind of conditions or relationships or positions. But just count on it. God's still there with you. Without exception, he'll be with you if you're staying true to him. If you walk in the light as he is in light, we have fellowship with one another. He will go with you. But it's predicated on us being making the decision to be pure to him. Because as soon as we decide to compromise, because that's sometimes easier in the world to compromise, I'll eat the king's food. By the way, it's pretty tasty, isn't it? As soon as you compromise, you're jeopardizing God's help, aren't you? Then you're on your own. And so we have to take this very, very serious. Where does success always come from? We do our part, but ultimately, 10 times better, where'd that come from? Said God gave it to him, right? 10 times better. Success will come from God. And I think that's in the financial realm, the physical realm, spiritual realm, your marriage, everything. It's going to come from God when we do what he asks. He said, well, I don't know how it's going to work out. Well, just let him be God and you just be his servant, right? He could work miracles, can he? Yes. That's right. And Amy wants to suffer for a while just to grow up a little bit, too. Jesus learned obedience by the things which he suffered. And then when it's right. This is interesting here. Can you please God and man together? Which is it? What did he do?
You serve either God or mammon.
Well, did he please both the king and his God?
Yes.
Ah, you guys are divided on this one. Let me go back. Where did he fight over his name change?
No.
Did he fight over his schooling?
No.
Did he fight over, what was the other one? Oh, working in the king's government. What's the only thing he stood his ground on? You know, defiling himself with unclean foods. It was a religious ceremonial law, Leviticus. But even then, yeah, drinking the wine, did he battle and say, I'm just not going to do this, and obnoxious and defiant about it?
No.
Or did he say, let's work out an agreement so I can please the king and stay true to my God? Is that what he did?
Yeah, that's what he did.
Did he offer a solution?
Yes.
And did it work?
Yes.
And did he please the king? Yeah, 10 times better. He's in his personal service. Was he true to his God? So let me ask the question. Can you please men around you and be at peace with those around you and still be at peace with God? Yes, sometimes. All right, it's maybe phrase kind of catchy, but did he please both God and man at this situation? Can you all the time?
No.
No. So I'm with you. So I just want you to understand, sometimes we buy into it. It's them or God, and people are going to hate us, and I can't be friends with anyone. That's just the way it is. No. No. It's not the way it is. All right? JC. Oh, Matt. Sorry, I saw a hand.
That's why Jesus said, blessed be the peacemakers.
Blessed are the peacemakers. So that's why Paul said, be at peace with all men, as much as lies within you. All men, as much as lies within you. Does that mean you can with everyone? No. And sometimes I have problems with others just because it's on me, just because of my person. I need to change my person and be more like Daniel. Yes?
I like what the Lord said with regard to Paul. I'm going to show him how many things he must suffer for my name's sake.
Right.
Paul needed, for whatever reason, to learn that. And he had to, because when he was Saul of Tarsus, he really persecuted the church.
Yeah. That's right.
And that was all to develop Paul.
That's right.
To be the best he could be.
That's right. I'll leave you with this verse and we're done. Psalms 24. Who may ascend to the hill of the Lord? Who may stand in his holy place? That's a good question. Who can have a relation with God? Well, it's he who has clean hands and has a pure heart. Did Daniel have that? Who has not lifted up his soul to falsehood, has not sworn deceitfully. He shall receive a blessing from the Lord. Is that what happened to Daniel? He was true to his Lord, and he received a blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of salvation. That's why we love the Psalms, because it capsulizes what we just read in Daniel chapter 1. All right, thank you.